Ever since he was a boy, author Jay Varner has had a complicated history with fire. Jay's father, Denton, was the volunteer fire chief of McVeightown, Pennsylvania, who seemed to love the firehouse more than his family. Jay's grandfather, Lucky, was an arsonist, obsessed with the flames themselves.
Lucky stepped back from the fire, though he still stood so close that he could probably feel the burn of the heat inside his lungs, and pulled a white hanky from his pocket, patted his bald head, and then swabbed at the back of his hairy neck. He cocked his head like a dog, listening intently, as though the crackle and pop of the flames sounded like a melody to him. He stood with his arms crossed and stared at his fire, never moving until the last flame died out.
Lucky's grandson, Jay, would grow up to cover fires as a reporter for his local newspaper. Jay Varner writes about all of it in his new memoir, Nothing Left to Burn, and he joins me now from WVTF in Charlottesville, Virginia. Jay, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. It's nice to have you. As I'm reading this story, I'm thinking it almost sounds like a novel.
Yeah, I actually tried to write it as a novel. I showed it to a professor, and he said, "This is absurd. Where did you come up with this?" And I said, "Well, this really happened." And he said, "Nobody will believe this if it's fiction."
The book interweaves two stories. You as an adult returning to your hometown for your first post-college job as a reporter for the local paper. And you make it clear right away that it really wasn't your first choice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly proud of where I'm from, and I love the area, but I felt that I was kind of ready to move on in some way and see the rest of the world and what was out there. I certainly didn't really want to go back there after college and definitely didn't want to be covering fires for the local newspaper.
You also tell the story of growing up in McVeightown, and you paint a picture of your father as someone whom everyone looked up to. And in fact, for you, it was a very different circumstance. He wasn't there very much. Right at the beginning, you have a very vivid passage that describes that, and I'd wish you'd read it for us, would you?
Sure, absolutely. For all the talents that my father had, telling jokes, giving advice on everything from repairing engines to building a house and fighting fires, he was best at leaving. By kindergarten, I could recite his schedule as well as the alphabet. Ambulance meetings on Monday nights, work detail Tuesday nights, company meetings on Wednesdays, and in between all of that, emergency management meetings throughout the county. His pager sounded at all hours, summoning him from work, dinner, or sleep.
Your love for and your pride in your dad, they come through very clearly, but I mean, there is a lot of longing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was kind of exciting when you're a young boy and you get to go to school and you could tell your friends, my dad was at a big fire last night, and make it sound thrilling. But that usually meant he wasn't there for dinner. He wasn't there to tuck me into bed. So it was this very conflicted feeling of being proud of him and what he was doing, but wishing that he was spending more time with me and my mom.
There's your father's father, Lucky, beyond your dad. You write about your memories of him, of Lucky, coming over to your house to burn things in the yard. Can you talk about when you became aware that he was, in fact, an arsonist?
I was 7 or 8 years old when it was finally explained to me what his background was and what he had done. I knew that he lit these fires every Saturday, and of course, my dad's the fire chief, and he went out to extinguish these things. So it was very confusing. I didn't quite understand it. But once it was explained that he had this history of not just burning garbage, but many other things, I started to see him in a different light.
In fact, he actually went to prison for arson.
He did. He went to jail, and it was during that time when my dad was a teenager that he decided to become involved with the volunteer fire company.
So we get this sense of some of the things that drove your father to devote so much of his life to the fire department, but we also get a sense of how much of a toll it took on your mother and how much she really didn't want to be a part of it, did she?
She did not, and it was such a small town. Everybody knew what everybody else was doing. I think she wanted her husband. She certainly loved my dad and was devoted to him, and I think she did admire him on one level for breaking free of what his own father had done. But, you know, she wanted him around, and she needed him around the same way that I did.
You live with your mother when you come back to McVeightown to begin life as a reporter, and it's in covering fires that you actually discover how exciting it was.
It was exactly the way my dad used to jump up when that pager went off. I would be sitting in the newsroom, the scanner next to me would sound, and I'd grab my press pass, notebook, and just rush out the door. There was the real adrenaline to it, and especially once you arrived at the scene. Fire has this kind of majestic quality to it. It's this living, breathing thing that can also destroy, and you're watching it happen. And you're also watching the men and women who are just like my dad, rushing toward that scene, carrying hoses and axes and trying to save, you know, possessions or even a life.
Your father died, Jay, when you were very young. I think you were 9 years old. And your mother didn't want the fire department to be involved in his funeral.
I think she felt that she had lost enough of him to the fire department while he was alive and didn't want to lose any more of it.
And it made a lot of people angry in McVeightown, didn't it?
Oh, very angry. And still, you know, to this day, there are people who will look the other way when they see her in the store. I certainly appreciate that they loved my dad, they respected him, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't their decision to make, and it was hers, and she had tremendous courage and independence to really not bow down to that pressure and do what she believed was the right thing.
And it was after your dad died that you found out that he might have been involved in some of your grandfather's crimes.
Yeah, it was alleged that he had been involved. I'm still somewhat conflicted of what level it was. I do believe that my grandfather at least taught my dad how to strike matches, how to toss them into a puddle of gasoline. In terms of the larger fires that my grandfather set and houses, cars, things like that, I don't know what the level was. My dad was older at that point. I like to think that this occurred to my dad, this form of abuse really happened when he was under 10 years of age. And I think that, you know, he was very conflicted in trying to decide what was right. And once he became older, he could make that decision for himself and did the right thing.
You call it a form of abuse. What was the nature of their relationship?
My dad was always devoted to his father, never said a bad word about him. My grandfather wasn't quite so positive. I think my dad often felt somewhat kind of powerless. You know, his dad would show up and burn these big trash fires right in his backyard, but my dad didn't do anything. He let it continue.
What's the lesson of this story in terms of your own family's history?
Everybody has this in their family on some level. They might not have an arsonist or a fire chief, but all of us look toward our past, our heritage, our hometowns, our own parents, when we try to figure out who we're going to become. Ultimately, that's what I was trying to do, is figure out how do these men factor into my own manhood and kind of inspire me and teach me.
Inspire you and teach you, but as you look at some of the darker sides of your family history, does it ever scare you? Do you ever wonder, is this in my DNA?
I certainly did before I wrote the book. I feel more comfortable now, though I will say that every time I hear sirens, I always wonder where they're going.
Jay Varner's memoir is called Nothing Left to Burn. Jay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don't you know that fire?